That doesn't apply to preachers. Never apply that to preachers. We can't do that. That would be just wrong. So don't anybody interrupt me and say too much verbiage, you know. And stop pointing your finger at your spouse. That'll help too. You know, our mouths can sure get us into trouble, can't they? Things that we say. We say the wrong thing, or we say it the wrong way, or we say it with the wrong timing, or sometimes, as we've just seen, we say way too much. So much foolishness comes out of our mouths. So to foolproof us, God speaks. He speaks wisdom into our lives to help us control our tongues. I can still hear my dad's resonant bass voice in my ear to this day. Sometimes his words were firm and corrective, sometimes very tender, sometimes full of fun and laughter, but always full of love. So many valuable lessons my dad taught me, and not just in personal conversation, personal lessons for me, but I grew up listening to my dad preach, and he was a good preacher of God's word. And I learned a lot from that. And many, many words of encouragement came from my father to build me up. You can do it, Dan. The Lord's with you. I'm proud of you and all that. It was fuel to my soul, especially coming from him. Words can build up, or words can tear down. And we have to be careful. Some of you have been branded with scorching words. I don't love you anymore. You'll never amount to anything. Why can't you be like your brother? You're a loser. You're fired. Words from bullies can leave lasting scars. And some have even been bullied into committing suicide. Don't underestimate the power of words. In the beginning, God said, and it was so. Right out of the Genesis account, he spoke creation into being, and he has spoken his will through the apostles and prophets so that we have it in his word. His words are powerful and authoritative because they come from him, the Lord. And since we are created in his image, you know, our words are potent as well. And therefore, God wants us to control our speech. And our key verse for today from Proverbs chapter 18, verse 21. The tongue has the power of life and death. The tongue has the power of life and death, and those who love it will eat its fruit. And so God reminds us of three realities about what we say. And one of those realities is that our words reveal our character. Jesus said in Matthew 15, 18, the things that proceed out of the mouth come from the heart. See, good things come out of a good heart, right? Evil things seep out of an evil heart. Foolish things spew out of a foolish heart. In Matthew 12, 37, Jesus explained, for by your words you shall be justified, and by your words you shall be condemned. Proverbs 17, 28 says, even a fool, when he keeps silent, is considered wise. Because our words reveal who we are. They reveal our character. But our words also feed our character. You know, you speak well of someone and you build positive feelings towards that person. You speak ill of someone and it shapes your attitude negatively towards that person. Grumble and dark clouds form all around your spirit, but express thanksgiving and you're going to be overflowing with joy. It'll change your whole spirit. Tell inappropriate jokes and your mind dwells on the inappropriate. Speak flirtatiously to someone other than your spouse and you're going to be entertaining a path you don't need to go down. Tell a lie to protect your image and more lies will follow. Berate yourself. You begin to believe it and live it. Or you can share the gospel with someone, and that's going to fuel you to do that even more. And you're going to encourage someone, and you're going to become an encourager. So Proverbs 18:7 warns, a fool's mouth is his ruin, and his lips are the snare of his soul. Proverbs 12:13 adds, an evil man is trapped by his sinful talk, but a righteous man escapes trouble. So our words reveal our character, our words feed our character, and thirdly, our words impact the character of others. And we already noted, Proverbs 18:12, that the tongue has power of life and death. Proverbs 12:18 cautions reckless words pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. I got to thinking, during 13 years of infertility, people would try to encourage Brenda and me during those years with their wisdom, saying things like, God will grant you children when he knows you're ready. Thank you very much. You just need to pray and believe, as if we had. You need to relax, and then you'll get pregnant. You'll see. And I know you don't have any of your own, so do you want to hold my baby? People say things, and usually they're well-meaning. Do you ever wish you could get back some words that you've spoken? Because once they came out, man, they pierced someone's heart. Sometimes you just say the right thing at the right time, and it mends someone's spirit. Our words impact the people around us. Proverbs 16:24 tells us, pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. Proverbs 15:4 adds, a soothing tongue is a tree of life, but perversion crushes the spirit. Proverbs 12:25 states, an anxious heart weighs a man down, but a kind word cheers him up. Now, because of these truths, Proverbs teaches us some wise guidelines to harness our words for the good of all and for the glory of God. And so one of those guidelines is to learn to listen instead of leading with the mouth. If someone says, sorry, I've been doing all the talking, that is a great compliment to you. You know, that means you've been listening and you're understanding, you're showing interest in them. You know, people want to share, they want to be heard, and you're doing that. So you have to ask yourself, do you dominate conversations? Are you the first one to chime in with the answer in class because you just can't stand the silence? Nobody's saying anything, or you want to show what you know? Do you find yourself planning what you're going to say next while the other person is still speaking? Do you interrupt? Are you always finishing someone else's sentences? Proverbs 18:13 cautions, he who answers before listening, that is his folly and his shame. Proverbs 17:27, he who restrains his words has knowledge. I was thinking back to when my son was about 5 years old, and he was telling me something that had happened, and I didn't like what I was hearing. I didn't like where this was going, and so I interrupted and I started trying to teach him what was right and what was wrong in that particular situation. And finally, bless his heart, he said, Daddy, I know all that, but you didn't let me finish. Oops. And then he proceeded to tell me that he had chosen the right thing to do in that situation. Man, I should have listened instead of jumping to conclusions. You ever do that? Listening informs us. It allows you time to hear the whole story, hear where the person's coming from, hear their heart, and then you can respond accordingly. You show respect to the person that's sharing with you simply by listening first. You may not agree with all the views and values of things that they're sharing with you, but you can still honor them by listening and seeking to understand. You want to open the door for people to talk with you and share with you. In fact, it's better if you just ask some brief questions that show your genuine interest and that require explanatory answers. You want to get other people sharing, talking openly with you, and you want to be listening. Related to that, another guideline is to think before you speak. Have you ever spoken too soon? Have you ever said things that you regret? The wise Solomon said in Proverbs, the heart of the righteous ponders how to answer. I don't know if we ponder very much. We just answer. You know, Proverbs 15:23 asserts, a man finds joy in giving an apt reply. And how good is a timely word? Proverbs 12:23 says, a wise man doesn't just blurt out everything he knows. Be discerning. Stop and think. Be restrained until you can speak wisely and lovingly. Immediate reactions are what sometimes get us into trouble. And you know, you may have something good and truthful to contribute, but the truth is sometimes people aren't ready to hear it right then. Jesus told his disciples, I have many more things to say to you, but you can't bear them now. So I'm not going to tell you, in other words. When I was a kid, verbally sparring with my siblings, and sometimes things would heat up and my mom would intrude and she'd say, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. And, you know, that squelched things. That prompted us to stop and think about what we're really saying to one another. Think before you speak. Don't let your mouth get out in front of your brain. Third guideline is to refrain from gossip. Keep a trust. You know, there's a lot of things that go on that you become aware of, and that doesn't mean you have to go share it just because you're aware of it. Gossip is often spread out of context and with partial information or interpreted information so that it gets distorted as it's being circulated. Gossip never builds up. You're not doing anybody any favors. The primary reason we gossip is really to impress others that we have the inside scoop. And there's nothing redeeming about that. We can cloak it in concern, but that's usually not the primary motive for spreading news. Sometimes, though, a story is too big. It's too personally disturbing to keep to ourselves. We feel it's necessary to discuss it with someone, to debrief with someone. But if you have to do that, be careful you debrief with a trusted confidant and not just a bunch of people spreading it all around. Don't be sharing it for sensation's sake or to malign or discredit someone. Proverbs 17:9 says, he who covers over an offense promotes love, but whoever repeats a matter separates close friends. It's divisive. Fourth guideline is to tell the truth. We all know we should do that. We expect people to be honest with us, don't we? We do. And when someone is exposed as a liar, especially a celebrity or a leader of some kind, you know, the media runs wild with it because it's one thing to do something wrong. It's another to lie about it. I mean, we don't tolerate liars. And yet, ironically, while that's so true in our culture, ironically, lying, pretending, deceiving has become a routine way of life for many Americans. You ever exaggerate the truth? Tell a story with a little extra spin on it? Do you describe personal accomplishment in inflated terms? Do you ever try to minimize the truth, trying to make yourself look better than you really are, or to make what you did look not so bad after all? Have you ever made someone else look bad by not telling the whole story or by embellishing the story? Have you tried to conceal the truth from a loved one because you didn't think that they could deal with it? Don't tell her it's cancer. Don't tell, you know, let's not tell her. She can't handle that. Deceit is a destroyer of trust and relationships. Proverbs 15:4 testifies, the tongue that brings healing is a tree of life, but the deceitful tongue crushes the spirit. You know, our Lord is truth. He is truth. He has established truth based on who he is. He speaks truth. Satan's a liar. He's the father of lies. His way is deception. He loves nothing more than to lure us into the realm of falsehood. He wants us to believe his lies and ignore the truth, doubt the truth, deny the truth, become deceivers like him. He wants us to live in this falsehood world. And Proverbs 12:22 lovingly but plainly warns, the Lord detests lying lips. I'm afraid I have listened to a whole lot of elaborate explanations and excuses from the guilty. And I've probably given some elaborate explanations and excuses when I've been guilty. I've heard the verbose, empty promises of politicians and leaders of various kinds. I've grown sick and tired of slick salesmen. Sometimes I watch commercials and I just laugh at them. That is ridiculous. I point out the lies. Proverbs 10:19. When words are many, sin is not absent. But he who holds his tongue is wise. Anchor your life in truth and make telling the truth your priority and your natural way. Proverbs 3:3. Do not let kindness or truth leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. And it's also important, guideline, to say it well. To say it well. Oftentimes, it's not really the content. It's not so much about what we're trying to say, but the way you say it that has the big impact. I tell this to my students in public speaking. Monotone, expressionless presentations will not connect like an impassioned plea. You know, how you deliver it matters. A vague expression doesn't communicate like a clear statement. A matter of fact explanation might not really get through like a word picture that stimulates both the heart and the mind. And a harsh reaction or an accusation is not going to be as effective as a controlled, thoughtful response. Proverbs 15:1 teaches, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. We've all experienced it, both sides of that. See, when we respond gently, it can diffuse an explosive situation. Your gentle answer not only disarms the defensive response in whoever you're communicating with, but it turns down the burner in your own heart as well. A gentle answer, under control answer. When they dragged a woman caught in adultery before Jesus for stoning, he saw right through. He knew they were capitalizing on the sin of someone to get at him. And he knew all that. And he didn't start a fight by blasting them as hypocrites. Instead, he stooped down and he wrote in the dirt for a moment. He gathered himself before saying in a very measured way, go ahead, let her have it. You know, anyone without sin, you throw the first stone. And that volatile situation was quickly diffused. And rocks were dropped. And the crowd dispersed. And then, Jesus went even beyond that. He withheld condemnation of this woman. And he sent this woman away gently, urging her to leave her life of sin. Proverbs 25:11, a word aptly spoken is like apples of gold and settings of silver. Proverbs 16:24, gracious words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul, healing to the bones. And I know from my own experience, it is a zenith moment when I've been able to say the right thing at the right time. Or I've used just the right tone of voice, a tender voice that has softened someone's spirit and opens them up. Or I've used heartfelt passion to inspire someone. Those are great moments. We all love those moments. But I had those equally kick myself moments when I barked and growled, when I shamed someone, when I replied sarcastically, especially with my kids. Poorly spoken words, even if true, do damage. It's how we say it. K. Kim wanted to bark at her husband. I'm sick and tired of being ignored around here. You're always watching television. That's all you do. To which her husband would likely reply, now, honey, am I always watching television? You know, did I watch TV this morning? Did I watch TV any time yesterday? So instead, Kim asked, honey, can we talk sometime soon, later, if it's not a good time right now, whatever's better for you. There's something that's concerning me. And so later, when they did sit down together quietly and no distractions to address her concern, she handed him the TV remote, put it in his hand and said, you know, I wanted to explain how I often feel. When you watch TV, you use that remote to surf the channels. You skip past something that you don't like to find something that interests you, something you want to pay attention to. And I've been feeling like one of those channels that you skip past to find something that interests you more. And when my face does come up on your screen, I feel like you press the mute button while I'm talking. And I would like to know what it would take to get you to focus on me just a little bit each day so that I can communicate about things that I feel are very important. And wow, it worked. It connected with him. It was something, she used familiar imagery, something that he really cared about to convey her feelings, and it got through. One more important guideline that I omitted from your sermon notes page, and that is to give a good word. Give a good word. I stepped into the hospital elevator just the other day with a handful of young nurses. There's about six of them. And they're just chattering away. They all knew each other and they're in friendly dialogue, you know. And I wasn't trying to listen in. I really wasn't. But, I mean, we're in this confined space of an elevator, you know. I couldn't help it here. And you know what? They just spoke without any restraint as if I wasn't there with them. They totally ignored that I was there with them and how what they said might impact me or anything. They just unabashedly, casually, they turned their talk into vulgar things and laced with profanity and innuendos and joking around in inappropriate ways and immodest expressions. It was embarrassing. And it was evidently the way they talked and joked with each other every day, all the time. And that grieved me. And I tried to insert positive word before we reached the lobby, but this whole situation reminded me of how much unedifying talk gets exchanged every day in our world between people. The way we talk to each other. Ephesians 4, 29 and 5, 4 caution, let no unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what's helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. Nor should there be any obscenity, foolish talk, or coarse joking, which are out of place, but rather thanksgiving. I mean, don't we hear, we hear enough bad news and criticism and lies. We hear enough profanity and gossip and harsh words and put downs and sarcasm. We hear enough complaints and threats and caustic rants. We hear enough of all that. Man, we could use some positive words that refresh. Words that are good words. Words that lift us up. Words that give life and meaning. Proverbs 25:5, like cold water to a weary soul is good news from a distant land. Proverbs 12:25, an anxious heart weighs a man down, but a kind word cheers him up. And so what if we refreshed and healed and built people up with encouragement and positive topics and praise and thanksgiving and joyful expression and sound teaching and good counsel, comfort and hope? What if we talked about these things? And we can change the environment around it. We can bring some light into the darkness. A few weeks ago, I didn't know I was in peril, really, or how much peril I was in with two significant heart blockages, but I'm in pretty good shape, and I was feeling very good. I was feeling really good. But my doctor was quite alarmed when I told him, you know, when I run, I get some chest pain here. And he was quite alarmed, got me going. A heart catheterization revealed some blockages. And they were going to put some stents in right then, and then I'd just go on my merry way. But it was one of the stents was kind of complicated to seat because of the branches and stuff, the curves and stuff in the blood vessel there. So since there was no heart surgical backup team at Good Samaritan Hospital, they transported me to Bethesda North to consult with the cardio team there. And so they sent me up there that night. Next morning, first thing in the morning, a heart surgeon came in and told me I was going to have open heart triple bypass surgery. Plus, I wasn't ready for that. But then plus, they said I had they're going to repair two heart valves that were malfunctioning, that weren't in good shape at all. I said, what? What's this news? My cardiologist said nothing about it. And this was not expected. And I dreaded the idea of intrusive surgery and the long recovery and all the ramifications and what all that would mean. I didn't want all of that. I just get the stents and go home tomorrow, you know? The surgeon explained that the valve issue was revealed in a test that I had back in June. And I said, I didn't have any tests in June. I just went to the doctor the other day about this. I didn't have any tests in June. He looked puzzled and said, just a minute. Rushed out of the room. Returned, apologizing with his tail between his legs, kind of sheepish, explaining that there's another Daniel P. Lang. And he had looked at the wrong chart. That didn't inspire confidence. But anyway, still, he said he was still all gung-ho about this bypass surgery. He explained it all to me and showed me the pictures and everything. He was trying to clear this is really the best way to go. You could do stents, but this is really the most reliable thing that we could do. And on and on he was going about that. And he said that the team would discuss my options and they'd get back to me and let me know what I'd be doing. So I was still up in the air about this, and so happened that the surgeons and the cardiologists, they were all in procedures and surgeries all day. In fact, they got slammed with several emergencies. It was just a big day for them. So I waited all day long, waiting and waiting and wondering, what procedure am I facing here? What this simple little stent thing or open heart surgery? What's going to happen here? I didn't know. I knew what I wanted. If I was going to have something. Finally, that evening, my cardiologist came in, and he's wonderful, by the way, outstanding. And he came in to explain that he could confidently get that stent in there, get the stents going, and that'd be no problem, and I could even go home. It would have to be the next day, but then I could go home the same day. If there weren't any complications. And so no one wants to get heart stents. No one wants heart blockages and all that. No one wants that. But in comparison to bypass surgery, that was such good news. I can't tell you how relieved I felt. Oh, that felt so good. And, you know, more good news, the procedure went well, no restrictions. I feel great. I'm doing great. I'm so thankful. And I thank that doctor for saving my life and for saving me the grief of all the open heart surgery. But that episode made me think. So many people around us are living that every day. Living in anxiety and fear and dread and issues and darkness. And they need to hear a good word. Words of hope and blessing. Words of relief and life. Proverbs 10:11. The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life. Isn't that a great picture? The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life. We, as followers of Christ, we get to bring good news. And I pray, I seriously pray that each of us are gushing overflowing with words of life and refreshment, and it's splashing all over the people around us. And of all the things we could talk about or share about in any given day, it's the good news of Jesus that people need to hear. I pray that would be the center of our talk when we open our mouths. The other day I shared with my students at CCU the three circles to new life that I've shared with you on more than one occasion. And so I asked them, you know, describe this world in just a word or two. Can you do that? And man, they just freely jumped in and they talked about the brokenness of our world and of their personal lives. And they went on and on about that. And I then explained that, you know, when we follow God's design, he didn't design it that way. When we follow God's design, life goes well. But when we go against that design, the Bible calls that sin, the consequences are brokenness. And so I describe then, we don't like living in this. We try to escape the brokenness. And it just makes matters worse. And we try all kinds of things. You know, if I just had more money. If I had more money, then I'd be happy. Life would be good. If I could get the career of my dreams, or if I could just get married, if I could marry that person, man, life would be great. Or the marriage isn't going well. So if I could just get out of this marriage, if I could get a divorce, then life's going to be better. And there's alcohol and other euphoric experiences. We try all kinds of things, but none of it works. But the good news is God has done something to rescue us. And he has sent Jesus to take our sin, to take our brokenness upon himself and put it to death on the cross, and rose again victorious to give us new life. And so Isaiah 45:22 says, turn to the Lord and be saved. And when we do, we begin to move towards recovery and new life that God designed. And as I shared all that with my class, afterward, one student who normally is out of there right after, he hung around. And he waited till everyone else in the room was gone. It was just him and me. And he said, you know, that makes sense to me. I'm feeling some of that. That kind of describes me. He said, I've been trying to escape all the problems that are going on, all the brokenness. And I've resorted to some bad choices to try to make it feel better. And it's just making things worse. And I need a new way. I'd be interested in knowing more about this. That's what we need to be talking about. That's what we need to be talking about. Perhaps our prayer, after hearing all this today from Proverbs, perhaps our prayer should echo Psalm 141, verse 3. Set a guard over my mouth, Lord. Keep watch over the door of my lips. I pray that our words will be a fountain of life to people. Sunday after Sunday, we give you an opportunity to do this, and it doesn't have to be on a Sunday. You could do it any time. But I think one of the best ways to use our mouths is to profess our faith in Jesus as Lord and Savior. To put our trust in him, give him our lives, and allow him to bring this good news, this transformation from brokenness to new life. If you'd like to be baptized into Christ today and have that washing and that cleansing, please step out. Don't hesitate. If you need to know more about that, I'll be glad to sit down and talk with you about it, or other people here could too. We'd love to share with you. During this time as well, we traditionally observe the Lord's Supper. And one of the things that Paul says about the Lord's Supper is, or that Jesus said, is that as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes. You announce once again the truth, the good news of the gospel, just by your participation, by the fact that you're here participating and remembering what Christ did for you on the cross. It's a proclamation. It's a declaration to anyone who knows you, who knows that you're here Sunday after Sunday. You know, we have this poster up here and we keep saying this. We need you Sunday plus two. We need you here on Sundays, right? The truth is we all need him. We need to be here. We need to commune with him. We need what he did for us on the cross and by rising from the dead. We need that relationship with him. We need to be here to proclaim, to declare to the world that we believe, that we're trusting Jesus for our salvation, that he is the good news. It is a way to proclaim by participating with understanding and purpose and meaning. So I invite you to meet around the table and serve yourself as you're ready and proclaim the Lord until he comes again.